Hey, I don't know if you saw this, Q. We just kind of talked about it a little bit, but Russell Westbrook put up 39 shots tonight, man. He was
Yeah,
having
I was watching the game actually when you texted me. I was like, yeah.
What happened? How did they lose that game? They were up 11, right? Did you
Russ
watch
took
the whole
some.
thing?
Yeah, I watched the entire thing. Russ took some dumb shots at the end. Like he took one three that didn't need to happen. But at this point, man, I wanna like. I'm almost to the point where I'm giving him a pass for this because they really don't have much around him.
39
And I
shots,
know.
though.
Yeah, I know it's easy to point to that and be like, come on now, that's a little ridiculous. But at the same time, we have to just look at what they have around the man. And yes, I would probably say that he could probably take like seven less dumb shots a game. But it wouldn't be fun if it wasn't that. You know what I mean? Like, it wouldn't be fun if Russ was trying to be conscientious of his shot selection. He don't care. People are on Twitter, saying, oh, why, Russ? Why would you do that? Russell Westbrook is the why not type of guy. He's a why not type of dude. I mean, I don't really know. They don't have much around him.
But he's managed to make do with what he's had before. So, like, I know he's going to take a lot of shots. But he's also been a playmaker for everybody else too. So to see him take this many shots tonight, it's like he lost the trust in everybody that was around him. Like Steven Adams had one shot attempt. Officially on record, he had like five free throw attempts, but he had like one field goal attempt, and Taj Gibson had like two. I know he had nine assists, but good God, like
Yeah, I
don't
feel
know,
like,
man.
I don't know, he had a lot of like, I will say this, he has a lot of help down low. He has a lot of good low post players. And I feel like they could exploit some matchups here and there against like smaller teams. 'Cause they got Taj, they got Sabonis, they got Steven Adams, and they have Enes Kanter. I'd say that all those guys are good enough in the post to get some good matchups and on like a switch. And I think that they need to definitely look into probably going low more because Nurkic killed them on the glass late. Like he absolutely killed them. I don't know, Steven Adams has kind of withered off from being like, we were looking at him as like, the best young center, not named anybody, that's in the big like names like the Davises or the Cousins. Like we were looking at him to be like, oh, that's the guy that you want if you can't get any of the, the big names. But he hasn't been as, at least to my eye, I could be so wrong, but to my eye, he hasn't been that like guy that, people were kind of. We're really impressed by last year against the Warriors in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think he's losing. I saw something on Twitter, and I'm not a big plus minus guy like that, but his plus minus definitely is trending in the wrong direction. Like so he's not contributing to his team in a meaningful way as the season goes on. So I don't know. We'll see. What's that? So New Orleans, man. It's just not working. It's not working. And when I watch them play, I don't know how they can make it work because Cousins needs the ball. And when they come down the court, like I was watching one game where Jrue Holiday would just come down the court and he would just give it to Cousins and just stand there, and everybody would just kind of stand there. And Cousins was scoring, but it didn't look right at all, man. It just this unity, this marriage that they have, and I know they don't have like a lot of other pieces around them, but just seeing the two stars themselves and them being 1-4, and since he's gotten there, it's just this just doesn't look good. It's just look good at all.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't have the answer to that. I remember I made a tweet the moment that the trade went down, and I said that people are going to be really, really upset when DeMarcus Cousins signs with San Antonio after this shit doesn't work out. And people were like, oh, come on, come on, come on. But that was obviously just like a joke. But at the end of the day, I think that has some truth to it. Not obviously, I'm not obviously San Antonio is not what, like, you know, it's not like, you know, a realistic thing at this point in time. But the sentiment that it's not going to work out, you could say it's a little premature, but I just have a hard time believing that a guy who is such a focal point of an offense like DeMarcus Cousins playing beside another focal point of an offense like Anthony Davis, I just don't really know if that can actually work out. And I think we're seeing right now that it's just it's going to take a long time. It's going to take an offseason. It's going to take them signing pieces. It's going to take a lot. It's not just going to be a, hey, our two massively gigantic talents can just mesh on the court together easily. That's not happening. You know, like, people who don't – who have never played basketball, even on, like, you know, just a and just on even, like, a casual level, on, like, a rec league type thing, you don't understand that – when you bring two people together who are focal points of an offense, it takes more than just a coach saying, go out there and do it. You actually have to learn each other's mannerisms. You actually have to learn each other as players. You actually have to be with each other, see how you all, you know, approach the game. That's a totally, like, in-depth process that doesn't just take a day or two. It doesn't just take 10 games. Doesn't just take 20 games. That's evident because even when we look at the Miami Heat's big three, that took multiple games. That took over 25 games to get fully ingratiated into an offense. And I'd argue that that took a full season. Otherwise, they would have beat the Mavericks. So I think that we have to keep it in perspective that there are definitely two options here. The first option is that this is not going to work. They're too big to play together. Not like as in like, oh, size, but as in like just like attracting attention and just how they approach the game and the way that they play the game. Anthony Davis, I don't know if he can mesh with DeMarcus Cousins. That's the first option. Second option is it just needs to take a long time. They need an offseason and they need more pieces. I have a lot of questions, man. I have a lot of questions about the Pelicans organization. That's a whole different topic. But I don't know if they're capable enough to make two great moves in a calendar year by, one, getting DeMarcus Cousins and then putting actual talent around the two without stripping the team of whatever, you know, cohesive talent they already have.
And finding a coach that can actually make it work. You know, and I think that's going to be the difficult thing because I don't even know what type of offense that they can even run when you got guys that are basically two big men. And, you know, I understand they both can operate on the perimeter, but Cousins really is a low post guy. And and he needs the ball in the post to be effective. And it slows down, you know, the offense, and everybody else kind of gets stagnant around it. And I think the other thing is it really exposes how bad the rest of the team, the rest of the players are around him, around all of them, and what Anthony Davis has had to work with since he's been there. Like, once they got rid of Monty Williams, I think this is all the organization's fault. They never should have gotten rid of Monty Williams trying to follow in the Warriors' blueprint, because they dumped Mark Jackson for Steve Kerr. Everybody got hurt in the West. The Warriors coasted to the damn NBA Finals. And then Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving got hurt. And they lucked up and won the NBA Finals that year. You know, so for all intents and purposes, if everybody was healthy, we don't know how that could have played out. We can say the same thing about last year. But the point is, like, the way that worked out for the Warriors, the stars aligned for them to get that title, and Curry had his coming out party, and everybody had their coming out party. That doesn't work for everybody, and for them to try to do that with New Orleans with lesser talent just wasn't gonna happen. But anyway, AB,
what up?
What's up with all the Kawhi Leonard love all of a sudden, man? Everybody loves Kawhi Leonard now.
Me personally, I do think his name, I think because his personality is so low key, he played for the Spurs. I think we're might be witnessing another kind of somewhat underappreciated superstar, like how Tim Duncan was. Even though many, a lot of us consider him, best power forward to ever play at his position, best player at his position of all time. But just talking about just the overall, just basketball, casual to somewhat diehard fan, people don't mention Tim Duncan. I think, especially if Kawhi wins a couple of more championships, get a couple more rings, I think he's still going to go down as a Tim Duncan-ish type player. Just, if he was playing for the Knicks or the Lakers, he'll be one or two. Well, he'll be two right behind LeBron James. Well, I don't have an issue with people ranking him two now, because I think he is becoming one of the most deadly two-way players that we gonna see in today's game. Because now he is just as committed on the offensive end as he is on the defensive end. His offensive game has gotten even crazier this coming from last season into this season. It's like, it's nuts. And if he continue this path and still be as intense and still focus on defense as well as his offense, as well as his offense, yeah, man, Kawhi Leonard is going to be that dude, man. Like, you're already seeing that he's being that guy for San Antonio. It's like Duncan passed that torch to him and was like, this is going to be your franchise for the next 12 years. And, barring on, as long as he don't get no injury, he'll be good, man. If he can beat this Golden State squad in the playoffs, man, that's what he needs to do now to add more to his legacy, man. Beat this Golden State team, win a couple more championships, man. I think Kawhi Leonard, he'll be up there, because, man, that dude game is just flourishing right in front of our eyes.
He makes it look easy too.
He does. He really do, man.
Like, to put up 17 in the quarter, to hit that big shot, to get the LeBron block at the end of the game. And the other thing, B, is like you said, like, we forget this guy has a championship already. But yeah, Nobody ever talks about Kawhi Leonard.
Right, and the fashion and the way he won that championship. Western Conference Finals, he guarded Durant. NBA Finals, he guarded LeBron James and did a great job on guarding both of those guys when he matched up against them. So, I think he's going to be that next. He's on that path to being that underappreciated superstar, just because of his personality and the team he's playing on, the franchise he's playing on.
One thing that I have been probing on Twitter that people automatically meet with resistance because people don't like to think deeply about the game, is can we really say that Russell Westbrook has way considerably less help than Kawhi? No. I don't think we can.
Yeah,
and people need to stop automatically assuming, no, we can't. No, Russ doesn't have anybody. Who does Kawhi Leonard, all right, outside of LaMarcus Aldridge, right? Kawhi has Dwayne Dedman. Like, he has
past his prime Tony Parker.
He has the carcass of Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker.
Yep.
And then people will automatically point to, well, he has Pop. I get that, but you still got to go on the court and produce. And I could make it just a bigger I can make just a similar amount of arguments for why Kawhi makes his team better the same way people can make for how Russ makes his team better. And I don't think that the talent gap is that much further for the Spurs than it is for the Thunder. And the Thunder hold the league record 27-7 on the road.
Well, it also highlights the importance of a coach.
True.
The difference between Popovich and Billy Donovan is evident in the wins and the losses. So I think that's why people throw that out there. You know,
about, and they're only 2.5 games behind Golden State.
Right. Which, you know, like is crazy.
They can really still catch them for a number one seed if they, you know, see if Spurs go on a streak and Golden State lose a few more.
Yeah, and the way that Curry and Thompson been shooting these last couple games, it's very plausible. I just think that we need to be having this conversation more about why do we paint this narrative that Russell has no help, but Kawhi does. And I get it. Popovich is obviously, in my opinion, the greatest coach of all time. But you still have to go on that court and produce. You still have to get in that locker room and lead these men. And Kawhi Leonard's leading by example. I don't think he's a vocal leader from what I've understood about the way that he approaches the game. But there's no need to be vocal when you can go out there and lock up positions 1-4 and even guard 5s sometimes. I've literally seen this man. I know I'm a probably sound like Skip Bayless, but I've seen him guard Boogie Cousins. Like, and he's kind of put some moves on him. So I'm not going to say that he shut Boogie down. I'm going to say that he is willing to do it all. And he's had success doing it all. And we have to talk about that. And it's funny because I'm kind of a clairvoyant because the day that game happened, I tweeted, we're not talking about Kawhi enough. And then, like, that game happened where against Houston. And I was just like, see, like, we're not talking about him enough. But now, of course, since that game has happened and, like, you know, the political, you know, machine of ESPN has gotten into it, then, course, we're definitely talking about Kawhi now. It's going to be annoying.
It already kind of is because – you know, it's like this guy's been doing this, but because he's not the Warriors or because, you know, he's not LeBron or because he's not averaging a triple-double, you know, it's not worthy enough because the Spurs go out there and they don't win sexy, you know. They just go out there and they just win. And what was interesting about that, and I think if you were talking about that, I don't know if you were talking about that Pelicans game, but this was a game that the Pelicans, they were up 4. And Jrue Holiday crossed half court. And Kawhi stripped him so clean and just went down the court. And next thing you know, it was either a 3 or 4 point lead. And next thing you know, it's a game again. And Jrue Holiday tried to dribble the ball right in front of him. And next thing you know, Kawhi's off to the races the other way. And he literally snatched that game from the Pelicans. So it's going to be a little nauseating to see them talk about Kawhi this way. I got to tell you, I'm on record of, you know, I like Kawhi, but I thought it was a system guy. He's not a system guy anymore. This dude can flat out play. And he's one of my –
I told you that, Ken, 2 years ago.
I Yeah, you did. It's on video. Yeah, you were right. You're right. Yeah,
Kawhi's coming.
Kawhi. He wasn't this though, FIFO.
No, but here's the thing, Ken. The thing that I do when I look at basketball players is what are they doing now? And based on how they got to this current point, what can they do in the future? And 2 years ago is the first time I realized that even though Kawhi benefits from the system, Kawhi doesn't need the system to be great anymore. Because he already had reached that point. So this, to me, is not – I'm not surprised at all. This was the natural progression of this player. That's why when I tell you, you know, years in advance, Embiid is going to be that guy. Certain players are going to be that guy because there are certain nuance to their game that then you can project. Now, obviously, when Kawhi first came out, they ain't nobody know this. But once he got to a certain point, certain things that I saw in his game, I'm like, shit, he don't need the system no more. He is the system. He is the guy. He is a guy you could build around.
You know, the thing is, though, I never really understood that critique when people say, oh, it's the system. Because in that finals, they called zero plays for Kawhi, 2014. They didn't call his number, Kawhi Leonard. That's just his raw talent. So I remember, it was KD who said, put Paul George on the Spurs and see what happens. Yeah, that's not looking so good now because, in my opinion, Kawhi is definitely past Paul George.
But look, I remember that 2014. You're talking about the one where they beat the Heat, right?
Yeah, by a record margin.
Yeah. Okay. Skip.
Skip Bayless.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Watching that, I didn't think Kawhi could sustain that. The whole series, I really didn't. Because he made it look so easy at times. I was like, oh, he just not getting lucky. But I was like, no way he can keep this pace up for the rest of this season. Not against, you know, LeBron James. And he definitely proved me wrong and a lot of people wrong.
Definitely. I think when you look at certain players, right, like that comment that KD made, it's because Kawhi doesn't need to initialize the offense. The offense is already the offense. He just does what he does inside of the offense. When you look at so many other basketball teams and players, the players themselves have to initiate offense, right? Like when you look at LeBron, Kyrie, Russell, James Harden, that even though, especially in James Harden's case, there is a system there, but it's predicated on one person starting and creating offense. San Antonio doesn't work that way. But within that offense, Kawhi can dominate. You know what I'm saying? And obviously, I think other great players with similar skill sets can dominate. When you look at Kawhi and a Paul George and you look to swap those guys, the question becomes, can Kawhi Leonard get the rebound, come down, make moves one-on-one on that guy, create for himself and others? That's where it becomes a question mark. For me, that question mark has been alleviated because of his progression. But I still question, can he be as great in that role as he is right now, as great as a KD, as great as a LeBron? Obviously, there's not many players I'll put ahead of him, but, you know, a James Harden creating for himself and others. Not saying he does not do that now, but the system aids him in knowing where people are supposed to be when they're supposed to be there. You can throw the spots versus creating and truly gauging how much of a playmaker Kawhi is. So I think that question is still, it's still valid. It's still valid to ask that.
What happened to LaMarcus Aldridge?
Hey, he's a bum.
Oh, he's a bum now?
No,
he doesn't come through in a clutch. Not because he's not talented, not because he can't average, you know, all-star numbers. Yes, he can do that, but he's a bum because he cannot, he becomes small in the biggest moments. And as a basketball player, you're supposed to get big in the bigger moments, not smaller. And that's why I'm calling him a bum.
Hey, B, didn't I say that about LaMarcus couple of years ago? And
you did.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Okay. All right. I thought I remember Raph argument, but okay.
I just think that we had to be real with ourselves and recognize that LaMarcus has always been this guy. And for us to expect him at, damn near 29, 30 years old, that he's just going to go to another team. He's already set in his ways. Just become this guy. It just wasn't realistic for us to think that. But obviously he aids the team. He helps the team, but he's just not a clutch player, man. He's just not. But the good thing is that he has, you know, a guy who wears the number 2 who is.
Yeah. Lucky for him. So, But FIFO, you weren't on when we were talking about on Dead End Sports about Bogut and the impact of that injury, if any. Like B and I, we don't think is going to impact them that much because, hell, he only played 2 minutes with the team anyway. So what are your thoughts on Bogut's injury? And I know, Q, you wanted to you had some thoughts on it too.
I think going through the Eastern Conference playoffs, it can be an issue. I don't think they necessarily need Bogut to win the title just because of the style of play of who we perceive will make the finals in Golden State. So against Golden State, I don't think you really need him on the court. I think he could have definitely provided some insights as to how they want to attack. Obviously, it's a little bit different than when he was there, but any insight is great insight. But I think throughout this Eastern Conference, you look at some of the teams that they're going to have to go through. They're a little bit bigger, a little bit more deep at the, you know, the front court position. And what if San Antonio makes it? Bogut becomes huge in that series, you know? So I definitely think it can hurt them. I agree with LeBron. I understand them being deflated because it just happened in the moment.
I agree for the most part that they don't really have to have, you know, a deep front court to compete with the likes of almost all-star Zaza Pachulia. You know, they don't really need to have, you know, too many bigs for that. But, yeah, man, Bogut, his injury, like, literally happened, what, gone in 60 seconds, right? Like, that's crazy. He was literally gone in 60 seconds. So he gets on the court, and I think, well, who is it? Rodney Magruder, I think, if I'm not mistaken. He, like, has a very standard procedural, like, you know, by the numbers, just, you know, it's run-of-the-mill contact and breaks his tibia. The ramifications of that for the Cavaliers is very simple. Very much what people said. When you get to the playoffs, it's going to test you. But you have LeBron James, you'll be able to overcome it. It's only a matter of the bigger teams that you play. I haven't even checked the Eastern Conference picture in like a couple weeks, but I know that just from looking at it, you have the likes of, you know, Toronto, which is not that much of a threat because Kyle Lowry just, what, broke his wrist or something? Or like, fracture in his wrist or something, that's in his shooting wrist. That's not going to be 100% by playoff time, and I don't expect that to be a threat to the Cavaliers. But they do have Ibaka. They do have Valanciunas, who healthy for the first time in a couple weeks. You know, you have the bigger teams. So what happens when Tristan Thompson gets in foul trouble? What happens when, you know, he gets, like, a nicked-up injury and, you know, he might be out for a couple days? We don't know. They don't expect Kevin Love back probably until maybe late in the regular season, almost damn near first game playoffs. He might not even play till a playoff game. The back injury is none to play with. So we don't really know. And they're very thin at the front court position. That's why they wanted to get Bogut in the first place. But I still think that they'll have their pick of who they can sign because they definitely have more talent out there. I saw that even though I'm not a fan of his game, they might be down to desperation time. I saw Jared Sullinger was working out for Miami. You have Larry Sanders who wants to come back to the NBA, who was a great, you know, great rim-protecting big. They have a couple more bigs out there. I'm trying to figure out if there's any that I'm missing. But there's a couple more bigs out there that you can go. You can also go to the D League if you are really desperate. But it's going to show in those early playoff games. Atlanta, it's going to happen. But I think that the Bogut injury, we don't know what they were going to be to begin with him. So it's not a crushing blow. It's just like, oh, damn, man, we just got you. You know, it's like you drive your car out the lot and you get in an accident. That's basically what happened.
Hey, Q, you want to go ahead and we can just end on this. Talk to him about the Fultz and Ball. I think you said you had a question about that.
Yeah, I just wanted to pick everyone's brain, especially FIFO. I remember FIFO said a couple weeks back on Twitter that he's a huge I'm not gonna put words in his mouth, but I take that he's a fan of Lonzo Ball's game, and he thinks he's, if I'm not mistaken, the best point guard in the draft.
Yeah, I think it all depends on who's drafting, and I'll tell you the reasons why I like either one. I don't think you can go wrong. I think both of them are pretty damn good. The thing that I like about Lonzo Ball is that when he's playing at breakneck speed, he's still under control. He makes the game easier. He also elevates people around him. Not saying Markelle Fultz doesn't do that, but the unselfishness of Lonzo Ball is super apparent, and he can take over when need be. And I like players that rather defer and get everybody else involved, because then when you think I'm going to pass and I'm out here trying to score, you can't stop me. With Markelle Fultz, I think that he is better suited to be drafted to a place that the cupboard is bare, where he is your absolute starting point. Because I think as a point guard, what he brings to the table is more size than Lonzo Ball, and more of a traditional type point pick and roll type point guard, where the NBA is going to, where I think Lonzo Ball is more of an open court type point guard that has better shooting range than Markelle Fultz. So with that being said, I think Markelle Fultz is a better scorer and can run a pick and roll offense, but is more aggressive scoring. So again, if you don't have anything in that cupboard when you're trying to rebuild, Markelle Fultz is the perfect place to start. Where if you have a young piece or two and you don't know what they're going to be, Lonzo Ball can help expedite the process of that player becoming what they're supposed to be. So again, it's really nitpicking, because I think that they both have weaknesses. Like, if you look at Lonzo's game, because of how he shoots, he doesn't shoot when he drives right. When he goes right, he attacks the basket. When he goes left, he typically does a step back. So you know, even Markelle Fultz with some of his reads, you know what I'm saying? Like it just seems like he's out of control at times. He may be pressing, forcing the issue. But at the end of the day, I think that both of those guys are great. They're both worthy of the number one pick. I just think it depends on who's picking.
Well, let's expound upon that, because I think it's like, you know, getting into some real basketball nerd territory here. Mm-hmm. That's what me and Ryan used to do. We used to ponder these things. And I want to throw some scenarios at you. I'm going to tell you a scenario. And you're going to pick between Lonzo Ball and Markelle Fultz. Okay. If you're Brian Colangelo, you have the number one pick. Assuming Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid are healthy next season, who are you picking, Lonzo Ball or Markelle Fultz?
Lonzo.
Can you explain that?
I'll take Lonzo, because Lonzo doesn't need the ball to be great. Ben Simmons is going to handle the rock the majority of the time. So I want somebody else that can score if they're open, but also keep the ball moving with or without Ben Simmons on that floor, keep everybody in the same place. Where I think Markelle Fultz, where he shines is with the ball in his hand, therefore taking the ball out of Ben Simmons' hand and Joel Embiid's hand even more.
I'd actually agree with that as a Sixers fan, because I think that in the open court, Simmons and Lonzo Ball is just absolutely insane to see. Yep. I love Markelle Fultz's game, man. The game looks slow for him because he just gallops. And like the way that I like a lot of my point guards is guys who can get to their spots. And I'm not saying Lonzo doesn't do that. I just think that all scouts could see that Markelle's a little more advanced in creating his own shot than Lonzo is at this stage, but not to say that Lonzo can't do that. I think Lonzo is shooting 43% from three, and Markelle is shooting 42.1% from three, which shows that Lonzo yeah, just a little
bit. But they're taking two different type of three-pointers. Lonzo can step back, you know, like 3 feet behind the NBA three-pointers where Markel is typically right on that line. So they're taking different type of threes.
Yeah, and he's definitely taking those, like, spot-up threes for Lonzo. And the thing is, though, Lonzo, a majority of his shots are, like, spot-ups, but there's that, like, 10% of his shots that are just, like, those Curry threes, which are ridiculous. Okay, scenario.
Wait, hold on. Before you move on, that's the reason why I like Lonzo, because the reason why he's taking a lot of catch-and-shoot type threes is because he's unselfish and the ball moves. So by the time it comes back to him, he's already stationary. You know what I'm saying? So that's the reason why I like him.
Yeah, like Coach Alford, the way that he runs his offense, I think we have to be fair to Markel Fultz and also acknowledge that his team, man, is just really bad. They have nobody around him. I think there are at least three guys on UCLA that I will use a draft pick on. I love this TJ Leaf kid, this Bryce Alford kid, and Lonzo Ball. Those are three guys I would definitely pick because all three
of
those.
None of them outside of Ball in the lottery, though. The rest of those out of lottery.
Outside the lottery. Not on some like top 15, but like outside the lottery, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like those are guys I would definitely take a look at. All right, but second scenario I wanted to ask you, if you're Danny Ainge in the Boston Celtics, you have Isaiah Thomas. Do you still take Lonzo Ball or are you taking Markel Fultz?
I think that's a toss-up. I think you can – for Boston, it doesn't matter really where they go. Again, I'm more of a Lonzo Ball guy, so that's who I would take if I had the number one pick, me personally. But they can't go wrong there. I think that having a Brad Stevens and – with Markel Fultz's advancement with the pick and roll basketball, that's probably a better fit for a quicker turnaround for Markel Fultz to be great.
Yeah, let me ask you all. Have you all been paying attention to just like a couple of Lonzo Ball highlights? You know, here and there, you might see him on the timeline.
Yeah, I mean, I see highlights, but, you know, by them being West Coast games, you know, it's really hard for me to, like, really sit. I mean, I won't be able to sit down and watch Lonzo Ball's game until the tournament because, you know, I'm going to be invested in watching a lot of the games. Regular season is really, like I said, it's really hard because it's just that West Coast time, man. Just that it's hard for me to check those West Coast games. But so I don't see as much as probably as you see as far as, like, watching his – whole game and everything besides what his dad is always saying being better than Steph Curry and all that stuff. I mean, I you know, making that jump from college to NBA, man, that's a big jump. So, you know, just because you're doing something in college don't necessarily mean you're gonna be successful in NBA. So I mean, I would be looking for, I mean, we've seen plenty of college players that bought out, go to the NBA. Nothing. So, you know, it's that transition, man. This is going to be interesting. But, yeah, I wish I could watch more of his games, you know, just during the regular season. Just, you know, if he was probably playing for a East Coast, Eastern Standard or Central Time team, I think I would probably be able to see more games. But just that West Coast, I just haven't watched that much, you know. Same thing with, like, college football. It's like when they talk about cats on the West Coast, I just be like, I haven't seen much of them because it's just the West Coast. You know, so
nine, like, you know, just ridiculous,
huh?
Because like their game started at 8 p.m.
Yeah, and it's like 11. You know, games come on 10:30, 11, 11:30. You know, bro, I got to get up in the morning, so it's hard. Like I said, but I know the tournament. Yeah, I'm going to definitely watch like a whole game of Lonzo's Ball. You know, see him, you know, ball out in the full game because, you know, NCAA tournament. They showing games all day, so I'll be able to watch it.
Definitely, I think the major thing that's going to be fun for me is being able to like see like the casual casuals their reactions to Lonzo and just like the lottery picks like Josh Jackson and Malik Monk and all those guys, because like it separates the like separates the casual from the hardcore when, like, a guy that you've been following since, like, he was, like, a damn near, you know, freshman in high school balls out. And everyone's like, who is this? This guy, you know? And the whole time, years, like, man, he been doing this, man. I try to put y'all up on game. But I think Ken, I know you saw Lonzo's dad on Undisputed today talking that talk about how he told him he was going to stay on the West Coast because he don't want to be in Kansas, you know, when something happens and he can't go nowhere, can't come back home. I think that's BS. I think he told him, yo, for the brand, you got to stay home because you got to play all your basketball in Los Angeles. And the way that the Lakers are losing, the Sixers own that pick if it drops out of the top three, but they are right in on that three pick. And I'll let you know right now, if they can land the lottery, I know LeVar Ball is going to be calling Magic all day, every day, saying, yo, look, check it out.
I think Magic will get on the phone and call LeVar. How the dude is going to be around?
That could be very well, like, what happens. Like, that's my third scenario. I assume that, like, you're definitely just taking, you know, if you're Magic and you're the Lakers GM, I assume that it's a no-brainer. He's from Chino Hill, L.A.
Look, you're in the business of entertaining and also putting out the best possible product. With the squad that they have, to me, Lonzo is the guy that can make it work. Because Markel, again, he just requires too much of the ball dominance. Like, it's just he's too ball dominant, where Lonzo Ball isn't. And again, I rather have players like that. I rather have unselfish guys that know how to get theirs within the game. Like, you don't have to force the issue.
So who's your NBA comparison, past, present, future, you know what I'm saying, for, like, Lonzo Ball? You can go hybrids on it. I don't really care. In my personal opinion, Lonzo, I see, like, a lot of people say Jason Kidd. I can see that. But I'm more, like, on, like, I'm going to say, like, a Deron Williams-Jason Kidd hybrid. I just see that within him. Just from the way that he can run an offense, the way he knows how to use pick and roll, the way that he can get to his shot, I see those two, like, the best of those those two, and also the worst of those two in him. Because Lonzo is, and I want to know your thoughts on this, Lonzo's footwork on defense, I see the potential for him to be great there too, because his feet are quick. And he stays in front of people. It's just he doesn't know what to do with his hands yet. And that's coachable. If you have the feet to stay in front of people, I think you have the potential to be elite on defense as well as offense.
And he already has the chase down block down. He blocks a lot of shots for his position. To me, he's a combination of Penny and Jason Kidd. The reason why I say Jason Kidd, in the open court, he's very J. Kidd-like. Very J. Kidd-like in the open court. But I think between there and being a crafty defender, I think those are the only two comparisons in their game that you can have. And the reason being is because Lonzo is a much better – he has a much better crossover. I don't want to say a handle, because J. Kidd had a lot of handles, but – Lonzo has more moves. He just hasn't used them. And I'm telling you, when he gets to the NBA, he's gonna surprise some people. But Lonzo has more moves. And then Lonzo is way more athletic than Jason Kidd. Way more. He's a lot like Penny in that regard. The only difference is that I would say Penny, even though he was pass first as well, he showed the propensity to score more. Where Lonzo right now, he hasn't been put in that position. He doesn't have to score. So I don't know if he can be as good of a scorer as Penny, but I think he's a combination of those two guys when I watch him play.
I guess my final question here, as we, you know, wrap up, is I'm getting the sense that you think Markelle Fultz is very, you know, I'm not getting the sense when you said this, he's ball dominant. And I wouldn't disagree with that as long as we qualify under the fact that Washington does not really have a lot of talent or any talent around Markelle Fultz for him to distribute or even get others involved. But the one thing that I wanted to kind of talk with you about is, do you think that Lonzo's talent is like just malleable to any situation? Like you think he could fit with like a Phoenix Suns or fit with a Minnesota, or, you know, if those teams won like the lottery, he could fit anywhere?
Yes. Again, pass first point guard. A pass first point guard fits almost in any and every situation. Obviously, I think there's certain situations where Markelle would be better, but I would take Lonzo over Markelle because his game translates to any situation. You can ask anything out of Lonzo Ball, where I don't think is the same for Markelle Fultz. He is what he is. And when I say ball dominant, I don't mean like he's the type of point guard that's going to take 30, 40 shots a game like a Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook is the most ball-dominant point guard I've ever seen. But Markelle is more in that mode than a pass-first point guard. Because of his size, because of the way he knows how to read already, pick-and-roll situations, it's what's best for him and for your team if you draft him. So understand that he is going to be your primary ball handler a la James Harden. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just how you are going to build that team to be successful. My ideology is to have pass first guys versus ball dominant guys, you know, but that's just me. You know, that's how I would build my team. But there's nothing wrong with Markelle. You know what I'm saying? I think he could fit almost anywhere as well, because the majority of the NBA runs pick and roll action to initiate offense. So I'm perfectly fine with Markelle.
Yeah, and I think the number one thing that we also need to quantify to those who, you know, like to get into the nitty gritty is that, like, when, and people will tell you this, that there is a stigma when people say, oh, he's pass first or ball dominant. People automatically assume that, oh, pass first, he can't shoot, ball dominant, he's taking 45 shots like Kobe in his last year. And that's not really what it is. A lot of coaches, when they find point guards who they can feel like they can mold into what, you know, a versatile point guard, you need to be as effective without the ball as you are with the ball. And I think that separates the good from the great point guards. Like, Jay Kidd is just as effective with the ball as he was without the ball, because he knows the offense. He orchestrates the offense. And great point guards can orchestrate offense without the ball. Markelle Fultz, as of right now, just from watching his film, I don't know if he has that in him yet, but just from seeing what Lonzo Ball did at Chino Hills and seeing what he's doing at UCLA, Lonzo understands that he has a team of shooters around him. He has big men who can post up, and he knows that he can get to the cup. Markelle Fultz, on the other hand, does not have a lot of talent around him, so he's shooting, you know, a substantial amount of shots. He's trying to keep his team in it. I think he has come absolutely mailed it in on defense, because his potential on defense was one of his biggest, like, you know, positives on his scouting report going into Washington this year. But now we see that he's been mailing it in and getting beat on a lot of, like, you know, easy cuts to the basket, because he looks unenthused by that team. So I'm not going to hold that against him. All I'm going to say is that I see more defensive potential in Lonzo just from seeing his footwork and how he can stay in front of positions 1 through 3 than I see in Markelle. And I also see more potential in creating shots for Markelle than I do see for Lonzo. But, you know, that's just me. I didn't really have anything else to
talk about. So who do you like, Q? Because a couple weeks ago you said Markelle Fultz was the guy in this draft, but now it's sounding like you're saying it's Lonzo.
You know, I'm a lot like you. If, like, there's so many like, you know, options that if you're a team like either Philly or LA or Minnesota or whatever, you could go either way. If I'm the GM of the 76ers and we're taking the first pick, I'll just go Markelle Fultz just because it's like it seems like a sure thing for me. But if we go Lonzo Ball, I'm gonna look at the bright side and be like, oh, that transition with Simmons and Lonzo Ball is gonna be deadly. It's gonna be absolutely disgusting. So if you ask me who I would take just from any situation, probably Markelle Fultz, just because I think he has the IQ because he's a smart basketball player. And smart basketball players, to me, I will always give them the benefit of the doubt to, you know, overcome the holes in their game, because he's a very smart player. I just think that what we're looking at right now with Lonzo Ball is like kind of an awakening of like this big point guard again. Like, he's bigger than Russ. He's definitely not as athletic as Russ, but he's in that realm where you could put him in, like, you know, right now he could go to the NBA right now and be, you know, one of the more athletic point guards. He could also be one of the more pass ready point guards. He could also be one of the more, you know, spot up ready point guards. So you check those boxes, and it's harder for me than it was a couple weeks ago to say, oh, Markelle definitely. But I'd give it to Markelle just by the hair that I think he'll be able to overcome those lapses in being the ball dominant point guard that like you say he is.
All right, well, I guess that'll do it for us this week. We'll catch you guys next week.